Welcome to Soul Sciences, where inner exploration meets outer experience. I'm your host, Charlene. For more Soul Sciences or to get my books, please visit www.soulsciences.net or email me, charlenej@rogers.com. That's charlenej@rogers.com. And now for today's program. I'm here with Kathy Pooler, who's written a wonderful memoir. It's called Ever Faithful to His Lead, My Journey Away from Emotional Abuse. And this memoir, when did you write it, Kathy?
It was published last July, 2014. I wrote it over a five-year period.
And why did you write Ever Faithful to His Lead, My Journey Away from Emotional Abuse?
Very important question. This actually was not the story I started to tell when I started to write my memoir. I started to write about a simultaneous battle of my diagnosis of cancer and my son's downward spiral into alcoholism.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And as I got deeper and deeper into the story, questions kept coming up. And I finally realized that I could not write that story until I wrote this story that it seemed to just keep begging to be told. It's not a story I wanted to write. It was very difficult to write because I had to admit and vulnerabilities related to my choices of partners. I got into and out of two emotionally abusive marriages. And that in itself was very difficult to face. But this writing this story forced me to really face it. And the only way to get to the other side is through it. And there were many times when I put the manuscript aside because it was just too painful to look head on. But you know Joseph Campbell, what he says about your treasures are deep within the cave.
Yes.
Digging. That's where you find your treasures. And the treasures I found were healing, forgiveness for the people in my life that I felt had hurt me, and also self-forgiveness. Those were the gifts of writing that memoir.
Those are powerful gifts, Kathy.
Very.
Talk to us a little bit more about self-forgiveness. I think this is right to the crux of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I lived in guilt and shame. I didn't even realize it until I started writing my story that I spent 25 years living with guilt and shame. And that has melted away with writing through the painful process.
So you're saying that the process of writing itself was cathartic on a really fundamental level?
Oh, yes. Well, to the point where I had to do it in manageable doses. I couldn't just sit down and write it all. I would sit down, I would write, I would put it aside for months. I was dealing with my inner critic. My story isn't good enough. Who wants to know about
everybody has a story, and mine isn't that terrific. I mean, that's how the inner critic gets into us and really prevents us from sharing what our stories are. And really, I finally realized this is my story, and I'm the only one who can tell it. I had put my manuscript aside for about 6 months, and then I had a friend visit me. And this friend actually was in a couple scenes in my memoir, and she wanted me to read her those chapters. And when I read it, she said, "Wow, that sounds like a novel. I was right there with you." And I went, "Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay." So I had to have external validation for my work, and once I got that, I didn't turn back. I finished the whole process. That was enough to keep me going because I felt like my words touched her. And
exactly.
Maybe if they touch her, they'll touch somebody else who may need to hear. what my message is.
Exactly. Did you join any groups where you were able to or encouraged to read your work during that time when you were writing?
Oh, absolutely. I took a memoir writing courses for 3 solid years with Linda Joy Myers of the National Association of Memoir Writers, and they served as a critique group. There are about 5 of us in the group, and we wrote stories every week, and we critiqued each other's stories, and then we had a phone conference to discuss the story. So I had a whole pile. What I had is vignettes, and I had not shaped them into a story, but I decided to just do vignettes in chronological order. And I really didn't know what my story was until I really got into it and sent it to a developmental editor, who then told me I had 2 stories. I had 2 memoirs, and I'm actually working on the 2nd memoir right now.
Tell us more about a developmental editor. I've never heard that expression. I've heard editors, but I have not heard developmental editor.
Well, there's all kinds of editors. There's the developmental works on the story structure, the narrative arc, beginning, middle, and end. There should be all the rules of fiction applied to memoir, scenic detail, dialogue, plot, conflict, conflict resolution. You have to show, first of all, memoir is a slice of life, so you have to show a universal message, something that people can tap into in order to connect to your readers. So in your slice of life, what is your universal message to your reader that they can take away? What are the memoir takeaways? So this is what a developmental editor works on. The copy editor works on the grammar, punctuation, and then there's a proofreader. And I went through all those stages.
This sounds like you did a double journey there, that you did the journey of digging and finding out what you wanted to say, but you also had to learn how to say it on the page. Is that correct?
Oh, that is absolutely correct, because I was a nurse for 44 years, retired in 2011. I was a nurse practitioner at that point, and I always loved to write. I always journaled. I was always the one who did the Christmas letter every year. And people would say, oh, you should write a book. And I've been, you know, toying with this idea forever. And a few years before I retired, I started the memoir classes because I just felt such a passion to write and to share my messages, I guess. But my journals, which I've kept for years, really became the seeds for my memoir. So that really got me jump-started. But I needed to take classes because it's an art and a craft. Everybody has a story, but nobody wants to hear this happened and then that happened unless there's a point to it. And there really is an art and a craft to be able to write a compelling story. And I needed to learn that. So I took all kinds of classes and workshops and went to conferences, and I felt like I was in grad school, actually. But I was, you know, it's like in nursing, you really have to want to do it to endure it. Well, I found the same thing in writing. You have to have a passion for it in order to endure all the steps you need to take to hold a book in your hand, your own book.
Beautifully said, Kathy. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what my background is. I taught nurses for about 4 years.
Oh,
I taught them English, and I rewrote curriculum for them, but I'll tell you, I have such intense respect for how hard that program is. It is, more than 12 hours, 15 hours, about 18 hours a day to become a nurse, and that goes on every day for 7 days a week for it was a 3-year stretch that we were doing. And the other part of my background is many, many years of training as how to teach writing. That was my background. So I'm so delighted to hear you say that, yes, it is both the passion that you need to be a nurse and the passion that you need to be a writer are the same thing. They become a 24/7 activity to do it well, I believe. And this was very impressive to me. And I could hear in your voice the attention to the physicality of what was going on, rather than, as you said, well, then this happened to me, and then this happened to me, and then this happened. It wasn't like that. You took us right into, from the very first pages, right into your experiences. So I know what, for example, the outside of your house looked like when you were dating the man that you call Ed in the book. Mm-hmm. I have very clear images in my mind. And to me, that's the mark of reading and writing that makes us want more from that writer. Mm-hmm. So what is in the future for you, just briefly? What is the next step, or what are you working on now?
I'm working on the second memoir. It's the working title is called The Edge of Hope, and it's about the simultaneous battle of cancer in me, and my young son's downward spiral to alcoholism, and how my faith helped me find hope and endure and really overcome these two simultaneous battles.
Either one of these is intense. Do you mind my asking what kind of cancer?
No, I don't mind at all. I had stage 4, the highest stage you can have, of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Oh, my.
It was above and below the diaphragm. I mean, I feel very grateful to still be here. Last December, I was 18 years out from the diagnosis, and my oncologist declared me cancer-free.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Now, I have a lot of subsequent issues related to the chemo that I had, heart failure, kidney failure, that type of thing, but I'm still here. I'm living a great life. There's treatment options. And it's all good. It's okay.
What a powerful slice of life you've just given us. So You are still working with the responses from the chemo? In other words, you have to be careful with your kidneys? Is there any of that kind of...
Well, I have a pacemaker because I've been in kidney failure, and I responded very well. I'm on all kinds of medications, and my kidneys are... We're basically, I don't mean to sound trite, but I am really waiting for my kidneys to totally fail.
That's so, not at all trite. Listen, that, especially given your background, that's a powerful waiting. That's a powerful moment. Tell me more about that, please.
Well, the kidneys failed because I had the heart failure and because of the multiple meds I'm on. And it's irreversible. And I'm not quite at the level of kidney failure, but I'm seeing a nephrologist every 3 to 4 months. And if my lab work gets below a certain level and I'm starting to develop some symptoms, then I may go on home dialysis, which is not the end of the world. It's something I can manage at home and then at night, and then I can go about my business. I can even travel with it.
Kathy, you are absolutely an inspiration to us as you speak about this. I am just, my heart is open and my hat is off to you to be facing such an extraordinarily different way of looking at your world and doing it with such courage and such grace.
Well, you know, thank you, but I will tell you I spent a lot of time avoiding the elephant in the room and being very anxious about this and foreseeing all kinds of restrictions in my life, and my husband and I finally went and talked to the home dialysis nurse just to find out what it was going to all be about, and it was like this light came on, and it was like, oh, this is not so bad, and I can do this, and maybe it'll make me feel better. It's all how you look at it, but I spent a lot of time, it wasn't an easy adjustment, I spent a lot of time avoiding it and feeling fearful, and I don't feel that now at all. I feel like, okay, well, let's just do it, and I've got work to do. I've got another book to write, kids to enjoy, and family to enjoy, and life is good, and I can do this.
Do you feel that you can, or would you share with our listeners how your faith in Christ has created your life as it is now?
Absolutely. I was born a cradle Catholic. I attended Mass and received the sacraments, as all good Catholic girls do. And my faith tended to be superficial. I mean, I didn't know any different. Yes, of course, I went to church, and my parents were loving wonderful people. But it wasn't until I got out in the world and was making my own choices, poor choices, I would say, and got myself into difficult situations that I found God in a personal way. And that has really sustained me through a lot of trials in my life. It has made the difference, and it has nurtured my hope. And what I try to do in my writing is to show how that has manifested in my life in a real day-to-day way, so that God is not just in the tabernacle in the church. God is with us. He's in the battlefield with us. He's not just sitting on the shore relaxing. He's right by our side, giving us strength and grace if, in fact, we choose to tap into that grace and that strength. So for me, it was a matter of perspective. I mean, I had it, but I didn't use it to the full extent until I suffered my own trials, which I think is kind of typical, actually, that people don't realize. You know, when you're forced to really dig down and find your resources and find a way to get through some of these things, and then you realize you can't do it alone. So that's how it evolved for me, and my faith just is a very important part of my life. And I see evidence every day that of the presence of God in my life.
I totally agree with you. It isn't until we're at the bottom that we begin to reach out for something more that has a deeper level of meaning for us. We might have had, as you said so beautifully, a kind of superficial or acknowledged presence, but not really, oh, well, you know, that's lovely to know about and that helps me. But it isn't until we're in the wallowing in the muck of life. Now, Kathy, would you say that your first marriage, as it dissolved, that was when you started turning more toward your faith?
I did have a spiritual awakening during the time that I was going through a divorce. And that's in the book.
I haven't read that far yet, but I am looking forward to reading.
Oh, okay.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had a really good friend who kind of led the way for me, because she's in the book too, and she was such an inspiration. Her mother died in December, and in March her husband died at the age of 36, and she was pregnant with their third child.
I'm so sorry.
And she was so strong in her faith, and she really made me, just watching her just inspired me so much. And I really credit her, and I give her credit in my memoir too, for leading me of awareness, spiritual awareness.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this friend became the manifestation of a stronger connection to your
yes.
God, to your faith.
Right.
And
by watching her.
Right, and her support.
Don't tell me you're a Christian. Show me. And she showed me.
And what strikes me is that very often people who don't understand the Christian faith, I was raised High Anglican, although I'm Buddhist more in the last 40 years, but I do know enough about the tradition, I believe, and have a strong root there that I'm very grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of people from the outside might think, oh, Christianity's about you just wait until you die and then you hope you did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hearing you say very differently, that in fact it is a faith to be lived every day, regardless of the circumstances, good, bad, or indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you speak more to that? How are your children deeply spiritual? Are they deeply Christian?
Do they attend Mass?
No. That isn't what I asked.
No, I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
But they know God, and they pray, and yes, they are spiritual.
That must be a great relief to you.
Oh, it is, yes. I think faith is such an important aspect. It has been for me. And life is so hard that we need to have some source. And I'm not saying you have to be Catholic or you have to follow any particular religion, but you have to have some source, some higher power that you can tap into when you just feel like at the bottom.
I agree fully. It doesn't matter what shape the faith takes. It matters that we have it. Mm-hmm. It matters that we remember there's something else going on. We are based in stardust. Our carbon is the same as the carbon that comes from the stars. Something happened, something greater than we are. And Kathy, I must say that your journey is deeply moving. And you have spoken to some degree about how your friend inspired you. Was there any other one person who was your inspiration for you in the book, for your main character?
You probably haven't met great-grandma Renzi yet.
Not yet.
Okay. My little Italian great-grandma came over on the boat, was deeply, deeply religious and spiritual, both. And I tapped into that when things were pretty low for me, and it helped me. It helped me a lot. She was with me. Her husband died when she was 33 and pregnant with their 9th child.
Oh, no, I have met her. That's right, yes.
Yeah. So she's still with me.
Yes. That's such a source of inspiration for many of the listeners to understand that if you have a great-grandparent or a grandparent or a parent who has passed on, that still that energy is there with you. And if you are in that role to the young ones, you mentioned being a grandmother. How is that for you?
Oh, it's just pure joy.
Tell me about your grandchildren.
Well, my daughter has 2 sons, Ethan and Jacob, and they're 8 and 10 years old. I call them my angel boys. And Wayne, my third marriage, Wayne, who feels like, you know, it's really my first marriage, he has 4 children. And he has 9 grandchildren. And now let me tell you that together, adding everyone together, there's 10 boys. And we just had a baby girl.
Oh my.
In June. So we are in grandparent heaven. And they wear us out. All that boy energy wears us out. But now we have a little girl. She'll probably be a tomboy, though.
That's going to be one very lucky little girl. She's going to get all the showering attention from all those cousins.
Yeah, we're very blessed. We're very blessed, and we're very grateful. And we say it all the time to one another. What a blessed life we have.
How does it happen that with your physical challenges, do you sort of measure, you know, I can write?
Oh, yeah.
How does it work for you?
Oh, it's worse if I don't write because I just, you know, if I don't write during the day, I'm up half the night because my mind, it's swirling in my head.
Oh, no kidding.
I write, I probably write, you know, sometimes every day, maybe 6 days a week. In fact, I have to really watch that because it's not healthy to sit all that time. You know, I have to try to get some exercise and I try to take days where I take a break from the computer because I think that can be very draining. Yeah. But I don't see it as a chore, but I will, yes, I agree, it's very enervating when you're writing about things that might be painful or difficult to write. And, you know, I'm writing my second memoir and I'm reaching different points and I'm just sobbing and crying. It's really touching me to have to go back and relive some of this stuff.
Yes.
But I know, I trust the process, and I know that I have to maybe step back from it for a while, but I will get back to it because I feel drawn to it.
Absolutely.
And I know that it will be better on the other end. I know there will be blessings through all of this because reliving the pain is no fun. But getting on the other side is very freeing.
Exactly. Beautifully put. As a psychotherapist and as a meditation teacher, I can tell you that that is, I tell people that's the only reason I do any of it, because I know that on the other side, it is so much better. But when I sit with someone who is sobbing, who is going through and reliving in memory, releasing from the hippocampus all of the negative emotions and trying to get free of those so that life can be better, and then when they realize life is better, and that's exactly what you're saying, and you're doing it through writing it as well, so that's a tremendous sharing that you're giving.
Well, you know, that's, I think that stimulated me to write to begin with, because I looked around and I saw what a really joyful life I was living.
Yes.
And I was thinking, how did I get from there to here?
Good for you.
And this is an important message, because I want people to know that no matter how far down into the abyss you go, there's always hope for a better life.
Yes.
Never give up hope. And so hope is my message. Sharing hope is my main message of my blog, is my platform. Sharing hope one story at a time. So it fuels me. You know, it energizes me.
Yes.
To write.
So it's true what they say about trying to do for others.
Yeah.
It's generosity,
well,
of that nature.
Keeping the reader in mind. I do keep the reader in mind, although when I first start writing, I'm really into myself.
Oh, sure. Sure, you have to. You have to go down into those depths. You have to go right down to where it was and experience it again, and that's a very lonely thing. But when you come back, as you said in the beginning with Joseph Campbell's wonderful understanding that in the deepest, darkest part of the cave, that's where the treasures are.
Right.
And so you're going down and bringing back all these treasures for so many people, Kathy. And so
right.
I want to thank you. And do you know we're at the end of our program already?
Oh, my goodness. That was fun.
It was certainly fun for me, Kathy, speaking with you, and I'll look forward to having more communication with you. Will you come back on our program at some point?
I would be honored.
I would love to have you come back, Kathy, and all the best in your journey. Know that the prayers of multiple people are with you, and we're so grateful for the inspiration and hope you're offering to so many.
Oh, thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Charlene.
That's it. That's all for today. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon. And in the meantime, remember, be kind to each other. For more Soul Sciences, go to www.soulsciences.net or email me at charlenej@rogers.com. Many thanks to Kevin MacLeod for that great intro and extra music called Carefree. Bye for now.